Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Episode 422 of the Roguecast, recorded July 4th, 2023. Moist high five.
Hello and welcome to July.
Yes.
We should start with 4th of July. It's the 4th of July.
Yeah, to celebrate the 4th of July, we've let the heat come into the office and make it stuffy and too hot in here.
It's getting better. It's I can already feel it.
We figured out, I don't know if people know this, but our AC system here is arcane and labyrinthine.
If they don't by now, we've talked about it on every podcast.
Right, it's still a thing, y'all. They're like, shut up, just talk about comics, nerds.
Most places have arcane ACs that are...
That's true. That barely can work
in this... You know,
we can't figure out how to make it consistently cool off this area. So what we have to do is freeze the store out there in the hope that it saves us.
Y'all, it's like 100 degrees out there. Our AC does great right now.
I mean, yeah, inside, people do like they love when they come in. There's a few things that happen. They realize it's cool in, and they like it, and they realize that our air freshener, which happens to smell like cherries at the moment, is delightful, and they say it smells like candy in here.
It's weird.
Yeah, I get that all the time, and I'm like, is my nose broken?
I'm completely nose blind to our air fresheners.
I am not nose blind. I notice it every time.
Oh, we know you have a heightened sense of smell.
Yes, I have a heightened sense of smell. And it was very intense this time when it changed up.
That's your superpower.
It's my gift.
Yeah.
It's my curse.
Yeah.
I feel like that's pretty good. If you can walk into a comic shop and you're like, oh, it's nice and cool in here. Oh, it smells good in here. That's a good start.
That's a good start.
And then we'll sell you some stuff.
That's right. we set up a new cooperative game display.
We did?
Yes. This is like, you know, we've probably got about four or so sort of gaming feature areas. And we have to move stuff around. This is the first time we've ever had a big co-op section.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, when we were like sort of thinking about what we would give the section over to, we weren't sure, would it fill it? Is there going to be enough? And it turns out there was more than enough.
Yes.
To the point where we had to deny a few entry into it based on like a few of them that were co-op, but like, oh, but there's a traitor. Or co-op-ish, but...
Or co-op, there's too many expansions, we can't fit it on the show.
That's more the problem we ran into. Co-op are too big.
Ran into a few of those.
The thing was like Mansion of Madness.
Because I will say, that display right now has about 60 different co-op games.
Yeah, there's a ton of different games on it.
A ton of games, including... What was good about this project for us, too, though, is that it reminded us of the ones that we'd kind of forgotten about. You're like, oh, this is worth knowing. We definitely, like... I know there's some competitive people out there, and you wanna own somebody when you play a game.
Yep.
But we also have a lot of people who don't like hating things.
Yes.
And don't like fighting with their friends and spouses and stuff like that. And this section is for you.
Yep.
Come on down and browse that. They're all co-op. They have like a lot of different spins on how co-op works. And co-op games have been really a thing since, I think, it existed before then, but Pandemic was the big breakout.
Did it exist before that? I thought Pandemic basically started.
Reiner Knizia had a Lord of the Rings game.
Huh?
Arguably, even the original Arkham Asylum in the 1990s, not Arkham Asylum, Arkham Horror, was co-op. Huh. You all have to stop the Elder God, Cthulhu, mm-hmm. whoever it is, from all getting right. in. So they've been floating around, and I bet you could go back to like the 70s and still find essentially some co-op game. You know, You Against the Zombies in Dawn of the Dead.
Co-op
or
Monopoly.
Like that. Co-op-ly. No, I'm going to tell you the one thing that the game that defies cooperation is Monopoly. It's the literal opposite of a cooperative.
There should be just as Monopoly is about capitalism.
Yeah.
There should be a co-op version of Monopoly that is about socialism.
There probably is out there.
You couldn't call it Monopoly. It's not about a monopoly.
No. Communism the game.
Communism the game. A little on the nose. It'll take.
And probably not going to sell that well.
I mean, you know.
Communism was just a red herring.
We'll get Bernie Sanders on it. And
I am once again asking you to roll the dice.
That's what I'm talking about. We'll allow you democratic socialists in there.
So we also have our summer reading challenge, which is going quite well. It started officially on Saturday.
Yep.
We have already had two turned in.
No, yes. Four.
Four turned in?
Yeah. Some of the kids, they dive into it. And, you know, we are testing them. They have to, in their little packets, It's a fun little test. All you have to do is just put their favorite thing about it on one, the little worksheet page for every book they've read.
Yeah, you don't have to do a whole book report.
And it's very fun to look at these. I was looking at one, and it was a little hard to read in their little kid scrawl, but it was also delightful. It was the James Tinian book Wind, I think, W-Y-N-D. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know anything about that, but there was something about there being like some kind of vampire general in it. And she wrote that it was crazy cool. and
vampire generals are crazy cool.
Yes.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm assuming I read it right. Don't assume I read it right, though. It might have said, I don't know, vampire gerbil.
Also, that would be cool.
I mean, that'd be cool,
yeah,
too.
Vampire
but if
gerbils
you,
are crazy cool.
Go to our Facebook page if you haven't seen it and look at the picture of the girl who was the first one to turn hers in.
Yep.
She's so enthusiastic and sweet. And she's holding up her, you know, her prize packet, and I think every kid gets a star that goes up on our wall when they do it. They get the little prize packet, and if they're within the first 10 to do it, we have a little gift certificate coin for them too.
Yep.
But everybody, so far, the kind of coolest thing about this, and this is why it was such a good idea of Serena's to do it, is the enthusiasm of the kids.
Yeah,
like they are excited to do a reading program, and that's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gone very well so far. It will go through August, so you definitely have not missed out if you have kids or middle schoolers.
Come in and pick up the packets.
Yep. And we have a list of graphic novels to read. Basically, it's a list of, I want to say there's like 20, 25 on each page. It's like 7 and under, 8 to 12, 12 and up, something like that.
Yep.
And Serena's put together a reading list. You don't have to buy them here. We'd sure like it.
Yep, we'll give you a high five if you do.
We will. Dave will give you a high five. He'll come in on his day off and give you a high five.
Yep, I'll be like, hey, sorry, my hand's a little sweaty because it's so hot outside, but here's your high five.
We will call. You'll have to wait around. It'll be about 20 minutes.
And here comes the moist high five.
Dave with the moist high five.
All right, we're not selling that part, but the
reading
program
is
cool.
The reading is good.
These graphic novels are great, kids. Sorry about the sweaty
high five.
High five.
Here comes Dave with the moist high five.
That's a good opening to a song. Here comes Dave with the moist high five.
Is it?
Yeah.
A week from Saturday is our board game day. We're going to see how that goes, but we're going to be running about eight different games.
Like a demo day.
From Azul to Marvel Dice Throne.
Flamecraft.
We're going to teach you to play some games. Still places to sign up, I'm pretty sure. Come on out. Sign up before the places fill up.
Yep. And remember, your participation in this will influence whether we do future things like this. We're cramped for space right now. And
right.
there's no getting around that.
Right.
But we try to do what we can. Free RPG day, free comic book day, of course. That's the biggest, and other little demos and events when we can. But if you'd come out for this game one, we will do more game things.
That's right.
But you got to come out for it.
It's a test.
It's a test. If you fail, then if you fail in the game, you die in real life.
Yeah. We got a couple new game books: Remarkable Cults and Remarkable Guilds. These are from the people that do the
very popular ones,
the NPC
right?
books, the Ultimate Alchemy, all that kind
of
stuff.
I just want to point out about the covers of these books.
Yep.
The cult cover,
yep.
very inviting.
Yep.
The woman on it looks very nice. The guy on the guild cover, he looks like he's going to kill you.
Well, it's going to be like a thieves' guild, right?
Guilds are serious business.
I mean, they look like holy... It looks like a holy warrior.
Does like somebody like not
smite
does somebody
you?
Not pay their dues?
I mean, it kind of looks like that. I'm like... I want to join the cult.
Right, the cult has the inviting look. Well, that's how they get you, Nick.
That's true.
That's how they get you. You know, David Koresh was a very inviting-looking man with, like, the Jerry Curl hair and stuff. And
like, to...
And an obsession with himself.
Didn't he play the guitar?
He did. Yeah. I do recommend people as a side thing, go watch the miniseries Waco. It's pretty good.
Don't watch the sequel, which apparently it does have Michael Shannon, but it is bad.
I watched just a little of it a few weeks ago, and I wasn't getting great vibes.
No.
So this will just show you I'm not just going to like recommend every cult-based show I see. I'm actually not one of those people who watches cult shows, but the original one with Michael Shannon in it and also John Leguizamo and a few other good character actors is good.
Waco tangent.
Hey, you're the one who brought up cults, Nick. You sicko.
No, technically, Randy was the person who brought up cults.
Randy, you sicko.
Uh-huh. All right, so we got a new game from Asmodee called Champions. Looks sort of a party game-ish, basically. It's a it's like a bracket fight thing, and it's reminiscent of Super Fight.
Yeah,
a little
bit.
Guided.
Yeah, definitely more guided.
Well, am I correct? Is this the one that has Dracula versus Grandma in it? But it's like, then the test will be, it's not just like a straight-up fight. It'll be like, who's the best, got the best penmanship or something that?
Yeah.
Or who's best at baking a cake? And you're like, oh, well, Grandma. And they're like, well, wait a minute, maybe Dracula's been practicing for hundreds of years.
It's true, you'll be a cake master.
And I don't know if the game is one of those where you kind of do the debate in the game, that's kind of part of the fun, or
I imagine everybody votes.
Yeah.
Right. But do you get to make the case? Because I like making the case.
I know you do. You've got the soul of a Southern lawyer in there somewhere.
I just want people to know that Dracula could make a cake if he wanted to. A blood cake.
I was going
to
say, it has to be a blood cake. Blood-soaked cake.
Is that red velvet? Sure.
Sure.
Whatever do you want?
We got a Marvel Dagger, which I believe is a co-op game. I'm not positive on this.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a new game from Asmodee that is basically you are playing Marvel superheroes against various villains. Dagger is an acronym that stands for like global response kind of thing. I was looking through my copy last night. It has in amongst its people that it's got. There's Black Panther. There's Shuri.
Mm-hmm.
There's Monica Rambeau, who I refuse to call anything but Captain Marvel, even though her name is now Spectrum or something.
I think Spectrum is fine. Photon is good.
No, Captain Marvel or nothing.
She can't be Captain Marvel. I'm sorry.
Randy, you're going to be that guy.
I am.
You're going to be that guy.
Look, there can be, if there are like 3 Captain Americas and 5 Spider-Men, there could be 2 Captain Marvels.
I mean, we both grew up with her as Captain Marvel.
Yes.
She is my Captain Marvel as well. You know who else is my Captain Marvel? Also the guy they now call Shazam.
Yeah.
They're both Captain Marvel.
Yeah, you know who else? Sure. Carol Danvers is Captain Marvel.
Yes.
You can have more than one.
They can share it.
They can share it. Anyway, that tangent aside, it has a good selection of heroes and villains, and it's a little plastic standees and colorful. It looks like a cool co-op game.
Yeah. Marvel has been doing really pretty good with their board games.
I talked about a bunch of the past few podcasts. Yeah, they're all really good. Like, I really liked Age of Heroes. That is by the guy who did Lords of Waterdeep. I'm excited to play that. I'm not going to get a chance to play it yet, but that is a one of the big releases from Asmodee.
Right on.
We got Catan Hawaii, which is Seafarer's expansion, a little mini expansion for Seafarers of Catan.
But it's very specifically Hawaii?
Specific Hawaii.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It was always just kind of like a mythic land.
Yeah.
Not so mythic anymore.
I didn't know it was so threatening like that.
And then we got a game called Scoventier.
Yep. That's exactly how it looks.
Where you either play an ally or discard an ally. This is like a card game. You are in the vibrant world of Danish folktales.
Okay.
And you must defeat Gamal Erik or lose the forest.
I hate Gamal Erik.
Yeah, well, you got to defeat him.
I am the Scoventier.
You've got to help Vogtur the badger.
That does sound cool.
Who's the embodiment of the soul of the forest. Gather enough allies to defeat all the evil minions Gamal Erik has brought on the hunt. But all his potential allies have a dark connection to the devil.
Oh, man. Sorry. What is,
this
what
sounds
lore
amazing.
Where is the lore from?
This is Danish folktale.
Danish folklore, okay. Especially if it had, like, kind of some cool artwork. That sounds dope.
So, yeah, you play an ally to increase the strength of your party, or you discard an ally to benefit from its special power,
okay.
Or you can add an ally to your hand.
So this is like a kind of a, it sounds like a relatively quick play card game.
Yeah, but it's like how and when you play your cards is important.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know what that reminds me of in a weird way? Small World?
Yeah.
Where you had like these sort of fantasy races and civilizations you would build up, but occasionally you would need to put one of the civilizations into decline because it's like you need to focus elsewhere. And so this sounds like almost like a thematic pared down version as cards. And by the way, Small World's a very good game.
So the designer on this has done a lot of sort of expansions and things, but does not seem. And he's done a lot of one player games that he's built. So he did the Ultima Solo Box for Terra Mystica and for Patchwork.
Okay,
where you can do the solo games. But yeah, kind of interesting. He's a couple. Packs for the game Hostage Negotiator. He's been working as a game designer. It's maybe his first sort of lead game or
is
one
it,
of his big lead games.
Is Scoventier spelled Scoventir?
Tyr, sir.
Oh, like Tyr the god.
Indeed. The one-handed god who lost his hand to the wolf.
Yep. Was it the wolf Garm?
It was the wolf. Or was it Nefenris?
It was Fenris. That's right.
Know your wolves.
Garm is the one that guards the gates to hell, or
I think
whatever.
That's right.
All right. Onward, Vikings. What do we got?
And then we got a game called Sheep Hop, which is a kid's game.
Okay.
Looks like fun. We got a new expansion for Shadowrun, the Shadowrun Body Shop, which is more of those cybernetics and modifications and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Always fun. We got a new Pathfinder Stolen Fate Adventure Path, which is all, you know, the whatever they've got, the Harrow decks and all that kind
of
stuff.
Oh, yeah. The Harrow deck, of course, is their version of a tarot deck.
Yep.
Harrow sounds spooky. Is it like a spooky version, or is that just literally just the name?
It's just their name, but
okay.
There's a new Harrow deck coming out that is very cool looking. I got to look at a gamma and
like an actual deck,
a little hollow foil, and is a very cool looking deck.
That's cool. Is it the Marvel Heroes from 1992?
It is not.
Oh, boo.
It has original art. Paizo-wise has good art.
Those are the only cards I collect.
Fair. And then
what you said, Paizo? Yeah, their artwork is insanely good.
Then we got Pathfinder High Helm, which is the dwarves. It's their Mountain Kingdoms of the Dwarves.
So there's like a supplement source book.
And we got a new wave of WizKids minis. A bunch of weird stuff: some demons, giant ants,
fungus, mummies. But like, what were the mummies?
Crocodile and
a cat or something?
No, it's like a dog.
But it's not like. Is it just like a full normal crocodile, or is it like a crocodile man?
A crocodile man.
A mummy of a crocodile, man.
Yeah, and a mummy of a
sphinx. Listen, it's kind of specific, but believe me when I say their sculpt looks dope.
Yeah, looks great.
There's a few big demons that look cool. Honestly, even if you just want to paint some cool stuff, it looks pretty metal.
Giant Both ants, of those. Giant crocodiles.
Glabrazu, I believe, is the name of it.
Glabrazu to you, sir.
And a few kind of like more player character ones. But for right now, although that section is going to be a little bit in flux for us, and when like we hope to get like a big restock by the end of this month, things might move around a bit. But right now we have a little bit of rare space on the wall, and that space is being used as the space for where the new stuff goes.
Yep.
It's right under where our staff picks are. So go over, look at our comic and game staff picks.
Yep.
Right below them, you'll see about 10 to 15 minis that is the new stuff.
Yep. All right, let's talk about comics for the week of July 4th. And it's kind of a big week.
Yeah, do you want to start with DC's big event thing?
Let's start with Night Terrors.
Yep.
Which is, it's sort of a micro event. It's just a 2-month long thing, like a 4-issue miniseries, and then two issues of a variety of sort of DC characters.
It's 2 months.
Right, I said 2 months.
Yeah, but it's like, it's a bunch of, 2-issue series.
But,
I should say before we get too deep into it, it is Night Terrors with a K.
Right, like the Dark Knight.
Like the Dark Knight.
Right, and Batman is involved in it, but
it's not his event.
The Night Terrors are actually the name of the, like, creatures that are summoned by the Big Bad in this. I did want to say, this is technically the first event of Dawn of DC.
Yep.
It's also, it introduces a major villain and a locale, like these sort of nightmare realms.
Yep.
So, like, if you kind of just want to, like, build up your DC lore, if you're a horror person, these are all things that might put you to check this.
That put, opens I'm with kind of an obscure villain. John D.
Super
obscure in that, you know.
No, he's obscure. Dr. Destiny. Like, if you...
He's been utilized in, like, some of the...
He's been used in big stories, but you're
big
right.
Big stories, but he's not, like,
he should have been Sandman.
Yeah.
But if you said, who are some of the Batman's big villains, new one's gonna name Dr. Destiny.
No, he's a big Justice League villain.
I wouldn't even...
Starro's a bigger villain.
Yes.
He's literally a bigger villain. But, but Dr. Destiny is not the villain.
No.
In fact, he has been, like, he's being tormented.
But he possesses something that the new villain desperately needs.
Right, and which sets him on the path to it. I don't want to say too much about it, but as if... I don't want to, like, name him, but he does travel through nightmares. And
basically lets loose nightmares on the entirety of the DC universe, both heroes, villains.
I don't know if it's every single person in the world, but people are, like, falling asleep everywhere.
Yeah.
And these, like, sort of ghostly specters
and
rise up from their bodies.
They're also trapping them, or he's trapping them in their own nightmares of their own creation, so.
Also, Deadman plays a big role in it, if you happen to be a Deadman fan.
Yeah, it was cool to see Deadman. He's, like, somewhat front and center, and you're, like, he's the point of view character.
There are, six other books this week? Mm-hmm. Six total books this week. There's
the
First Blood, which is the introduction.
Right, and we should just quick say,
Joshua Williamson.
Joshua Williamson.
Our reporter on art.
Joshua Williamson is sort of best known for, like, his run on Flash, but isn't he the guy writing Superman right now?
Yes, currently writing Superman.
Or Action? Which one is it?
Superman.
And Howard Porter is the artist, and that's the guy who most famously drew, like, one of the most famous Justice League runs ever under Grant Morrison.
Yep.
Then we got Night Terror's Batman, which is also Williamson and Gillum March on art. So,
that was Gillum March.
It was really pretty nice. Oh.
Is that the one that had like the like one of the creepier sequences where Batman? Because there's some pretty serious horror stuff in this, but Batman like vomits something up in that. Is that the one?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. It's. I have to say, I think that's the best sequence in all of these. I know that sounds gross. It is gross, but it's not as gross as you think.
Then there's Night Terror's Black Adam, which is written and drawn by Jeremy Hahn, who's done The Beauty and a few other things.
Oh, that's
a little
who that
bit
was.
Of a Lovecraft horror. I actually really liked that one.
My favorite that I read was Night Terror's The Joker. It's Matthew Rosenberg and I think it's Stefano Raphael.
Yep.
And it is the Joker's nightmare is being trapped in sort of a call center for Wayne Enterprises, basically.
Right.
He's living a mundane life, but it's a very subtle kind of thing. Like, he doesn't know he's in a nightmare yet.
Right. Because
can we say what happens at the beginning, or is that too big
to
give away?
No, I wouldn't say that.
On page one, something happens.
Yes.
Right. And it's kind of funny, darkly funny. You know, this is one where I need to read it because I thought that the premise, I was like, oh, his nightmare was to be trapped in a day job or whatever.
It sounded very pedestrian.
Pedestrian. But as you y'all described it, I was like, oh, that execution sounds pretty good.
Yeah, the execution is very good.
Yeah. Poison Ivy, which has, as always, pretty spectacular art, is written by regular Poison Ivy writer G. Willow Wilson.
Yep.
And is her being trapped in sort of a suburban bliss with Harley Quinn.
Right.
And that is sort of her nightmare.
But it's like definitely a creeped up suburban bliss.
Oh, there's some weird stuff in that one.
And then there's Ravager by Ed Brisson and Dexter Soy, which I don't know this character that well, actually.
The Ravager is the daughter of Deathstroke.
Daughter of Slade.
Yeah. Right. Who assumed like an assassin role like him.
Right. But then she's like had... you know, romantic relations, or I think with one of the Robins, I forget which.
Okay. She was on the Teen Titans for a time.
She was on the Teen Titans for a while. She was on the show, wasn't she?
I remember flipping through this and I think she might.
I don't know.
That had a kind of good art on it. I don't know who it was, but I like the art.
Yeah. And that's Night Terrors. We've also got, Marvel has Captain Marvel Dark Tempest by M. Nesenti, which is a sort of one of these flashback minis to a previous era. Yep.
Since we have confused the issue of Captain Marvel, we should say this is Carol Danvers, the best-known Captain Marvel of the present.
Yep.
It does begin in the present, I believe it is going to be have a story, like maybe actual time travel is what it looked like, although not in this first issue, it sets it up, which I think is going to go back to, they said the era... that had the original Brood in the X-Men, which was a time when she had the identity of Binary, and which was like this.
That's where she got turned into Binary. She got dragged away and turned into Binary.
She was super powerful, and you know, she prior to that she had no powers because Rogue had taken her powers. A quick reminder that in the comics, of course, Rogue's all her strength and flight powers came from Captain Marvel. She inadvertently stole them permanently when she was a bad guy.
Yep.
Anyway. So I have this feeling that Carol's going to like be looking back on her past, maybe even multiple eras. I'm not sure, but Ann Nesenti was one of the big writers and particularly editors in the 80s over like arguably the greatest X-Men era ever. Mm-hmm. And so just like they've been going back to the Gray Hulk, the Venom symbiote suit and stuff like that, this is a callback to her era.
Yeah, Captain America number 750 wraps up the current. Symbol of Truth, Sentinel of Liberty.
Yep.
Runs of
Okay. Are they still going?
No. Because JMS is about to launch.
Right.
This is sort of like the epilogue to that story.
This is the finale.
Okay, that's pretty big. That's pretty big.
So, yeah, that's
it's on the 4th of July. It makes sense.
It's a big celebration of Captain America. There's a ton of writers in one of these big anthology issues.
Okay.
There's a new Doctor Who series called Doomsday.
Right, so I read up about this, and it's kind of interesting.
Okay.
Doom is an assassin in it. Doom is a woman who is played by a person. She's a comedian. I don't know if she's an English comedian or probably so.
Hmm.
I didn't recognize her. But apparently this is a multimedia venture. So there's like an episode tied to it. There's an audio play. You know, they do those Doctor Who audio things. There's comics. Apparently even a video game of some sort. So this character seems like maybe an adversary for the Doctor throughout different eras. I think they Doom might interact with multiple different eras of Doctors.
Okay.
So I don't know much more beyond that, but I was like,
cool.
Oh, that's kind of a cool premise. I have no idea what kind of weird, quirky personality this comedian brings to the assassin, but she does not, you would not look at her and say, oh, that's a killer assassin. I don't know what you would say. It's an odd look.
Mm-hmm.
But it made me curious about it because then it suddenly felt like a Doctor Who story and not some generic story about just a time-traveling hitman or something like that.
I was going to say, it takes a lot for you to care about an assassin property.
That's true. I'll say this. Doctor Who, if anything, could make an assassin not typical, that'd probably be Doctor Who.
We've got Barnstormers number one, which is another Scott Snyder Comixology product being brought to just like Clear. And there's another notable one. Some of his stuff that he's been doing is sort of digital
this
first.
This one has art by Tula Lotay.
I heard it is the like longest sustained art project that she's done. This one, by the way, a giant. I feel like it's three times as long as a regular issue.
It's two issues. It's two issues.
Okay.
All of the Comixology ones are like this.
So when I wrote up the sign for it, they made it sound from the solicit like it was a love story about a pilot, like a very young pilot, like he's 18 and he served in World War I, it's a period piece, who flies a biplane, and that he has a love affair with somebody, and they maybe have an adventure together while they're in love. Okay, the actual comic, the subtitle is called A Ballad of Love and Murder. Mm-hmm. There's con artistry in this. Mm-hmm. There's a few brutal sequences. There's murder. There's Pinkerton agents. So there's actually like a whole lot of lot more going on than young love,
right,
which is I think how they inadvertently or wrongly promoted it.
This is about Barnstorming is the notion of this sort of amateur pilot who flies into small towns in the 20s and impresses with stunt flying. And this guy's a very desperate down his luck.
Right, he's like, please, I just need a few dollars if you come out and see my plane.
He accidentally crashes a wedding, and
a series of intrigues begin because it's like there's sort of a lot riding on this wedding that he accidentally kind of ruins.
Yep. And there's also a potential that he might be crazy and hallucinating.
Right, because there's some stuff he sees that is truly bizarre.
Yep.
I think he is hallucinating.
I think so too.
But, Rennie, did you get to the part where they talk about a death toll?
Yeah,
I don't want to say how it comes up, but I was like, something Snyder does that's interesting to me is like, I do want to see how on earth that thing that he describes happens.
Yeah.
Because it's somebody describing it after it's already happened, you know.
I'm going to be contrarian and say all of it is real and none of it is a hallucination.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that is the obvious thing, honestly, Nick. You've picked the most obvious answer, which is that the weird visions are real.
You are the contrarian.
I'm the contrarian.
No, he's the hipster.
But anyway, yeah, I think
the hipster, the thief, and her lover.
I think Scott Snyder did he did that previous project about the women convicts who try to pull a heist during
a firefighter
while they're doing the forced firefighting thing.
Yeah.
And
Dark Spaces is what it's called.
Dark Spaces, but he's best known to people as the creator of the Court of Owls for Batman. He had a very long, very successful run. If you like his writing style, check out Barnstormers.
Yeah, there's another book from Image called Swan Songs. This is
I need to finish. I didn't have time to finish reading that, but it was interesting. It's from the Ice Cream Man guy.
Yep. W. Maxwell Prince, creator of Ice Cream Man. Martin Simmons, who I recognize that name. I don't know where I know. It's got sort of a painty Ben Temple Smith looking thing.
For those who don't remember Ice Cream Man or who haven't read it, it is actually a very successful but sort of cult successful Image comic. That's almost like a modern-day Twilight Zone.
Yeah, it's an anthology.
Yeah, and that seems to be a format this guy likes, because apparently this series, Swan Song, as the title might imply, is about endings.
Yep.
And this one begins with a young man, I guess I'd say.
Yeah, young man in the hospital with his mother who's dying of kidney failure, I think.
Kidney failure.
But it's also like the atomic clock is clicking down to maybe the end of the world.
Right. It seems like something might have, maybe even has already happened. Randy, you've read the whole thing. What I read was dark, but not bleak.
It's
totally
bleak.
Totally bleak? Okay,
it's
it is.
It's very bleak.
And I was wondering about that. But it was, I have to say, what I read was intriguing. And I think the people who like Ice Cream Man who are looking for kind of a story with some edge to it and some meat to it, right?
I feel it's good. I actually really like it.
It's got some thematics and about endings.
The next issue is going to be about an end of a marriage. So it's going to be very much jumping around a little bit in terms of scope.
Right.
And
it's not always the end of the world. It could be like, I think theoretically they could do a story that's like about somebody's last day at work or something like that.
But it looks like fantasy walnut. Yeah, fantasy based. Maybe.
Well, it looks like
yeah,
he's got almost like samurai armor.
Yeah, samurai armor, and she's got like sci-fi armor.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like he's given himself a thematic, but like the stories can take place anywhere, anytime.
Pretty and cool. Then Image has another book called Weird Work, which is by the guy who did the Bulletproof Coffin.
I think you should just let me describe it the way they described it
sure,
in the solicit, Randy.
I see it.
They said that it was the like the gritty style
hard boiled noir of L.A. Confidential mixed with the bright alien filled worlds of Futurama in this crime epic.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a pretty good pitch. Yeah. It is a strange book, but like if that intrigued you, you should take a flip through for
it. Yep. Then we got a few trades worth mentioning. We've got Night of the Ghouls, another Scott Snyder, joint with Francisco Francavilla on art.
So I found out that was inspired by I can't remember if he used the real one or if he did an analog to it, but there is in fact a very famous missing horror film that really exists in the real world. Where it was, like, I think filmed, but the negatives were, like, destroyed in the 1930s. It would have been... It's one of those things where, I think, as he wrote about it in this, it's like, this story could have been, as like, alongside Frankenstein, Dracula, and the Gillman, and all that stuff. Could have been, like, a character to exist alongside those, but the print got destroyed. Mm-hmm. And so there's a story set in partially in the past, partially in the present day, about trying to find out what the secret of this thing was. And I believe that secret includes, like, this might have been a real monster or a real killer.
Yeah. It's really good. It's got really nice art.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the Batman versus Robin hardcover, which has Mark Waid and Mahmoud Azhar. I was the lead into his World's Finest series that a lot of people have been enjoying. And then the Clark and Lex trade, which is another sort of all-ages book. But Dave, you know, one of the things that's interesting, it's about Clark Kent and Lex Luthor as, like, childhood friends who become friends who meet again, and
this is the graphic novels for DC's younger readers. You know, I'd say like 8 to 12 or something like that, or and it's sort of what you'd expect. It's good. It looks like it starts with Clark in Smallville. He gets an internship, goes to Metropolis, meets a young Lex at like you know like a science fair kind of thing, and they hit it off and have an adventure together, and, you know, it's the time when they were buddies.
Yep.
But the interesting thing that I saw in it, that they just very casually do, as far as I know, they don't make a big to-do about it, is that the Kents are black.
Yep.
the farming couple that finds a crashed Clark Kent and adopts him, because Clark Kent has always been a story about adoption, happens to be black in this case.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks interesting, and these have done really well, the various YA and all ages DC. And then I want to mention there were a few things that came out this week to sort of like issues of stuff I've been reading that were really good. The penultimate Daredevil by Chip Zdarsky, the penultimate Scar, Disney Scar, which actually continues to be really good.
I need to read that because the first two issues were really good.
Penultimate Adventures of Superman, John Kent.
Man, that issue was super good.
It is.
It's intense.
Yeah, we're doing a big wrap up on the Injustice and John Kent saga. It looks like.
I think everybody knows the Injustice stuff kind of like takes the tension between Batman and Superman and all that stuff and turns it up to 11.
Yeah.
But like he always writes about it in a thoughtful way. But there's some really dangerous things happening. And if you've read the full miniseries that they did years ago, people die and stuff like that. Heroes die, turn against each other. And this has, you know, a son set against his father and tells a really cool story with it.
And then another one on the DC, we've got Peacemaker Tries Hard number 3.
Fantastic.
Which I think we all loved. It is so fun.
It was so good.
He's introduced to a character in this who it looks like he's going to team up with.
Yes.
And it's so obscure that you could never guess who the character is.
You want to talk obscure, man.
But, like, you know, like, by comparison, Vigilante from the main series is extremely mainstream.
Yes.
And, but I believe this was the best choice that they could have made.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah, it's
a character I do remember from DC's Who's Who back in the day, flipping through it in the 1980s.
Yep. There's an issue of Doctor Strange, in which Doctor Strange and Clea attend a wedding of her evil mother, Umar.
Yeah.
And it's a really good issue.
Boys. I thought
it was one of the best issues they've done so far.
Is this, sometimes you don't want to go to a wedding sometimes.
Yep.
You're, like, dragged a little bit to it, or it's a friend of a friend or whatever. I feel like if it's your evil mother, Umar, you're especially in a bad spot.
Yeah, so that's kind of the gag of the whole thing, is that neither of them really want to go to this wedding. They get all dressed up. They go to this other dimension where half the people at this wedding killed Doctor Strange.
You mean in the recent Doctor Strange Death of storyline?
He was killed and then returned, yes.
That's amazing.
It's played like that. It's very fun. And then we got Fantastic Four number 9, which wraps up the Fantastic Four two-parter in what I thought was really fine style.
Yeah.
Really some cool stuff with Alicia Masters in this.
You had been a little thrown off by the fact that the previous issue was, in fact, a two-parter.
I was.
It was the first two-parter that they've done.
Yep.
But you're okay with it now that it's wrapped and you've seen the ending is good.
Yep.
It's a rare story to see Alicia so front and center.
Yep. By the way,
and in such a and with a lot of agency in this, I would say.
This is a Tom Taylor. That's a Tom Taylor, Jed McKay, and then Ryan North. So all of my favorite writers this week had books.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Is there anything else we need to mention?
I think that's all the big stuff.
Yeah, that was all.
Yep.
All right, we're gonna take a break and then we'll come back and talk about some news and then some TV and some games. So we got a few bits of news to cover, talk about. We got a couple trailers. Let's talk about first the Suicide Squad Isekai trailer.
That's
a trailer.
So this is we should say it's an animated feature. It looks like it is actual anime.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, right? It's like and like not just like, oh, they're kind of doing an anime style. It's like anime producers, writer, director, all that stuff, like. And we don't know what to make of this little micro trailer teaser thing.
It's all Joker and Harley Quinn, for the most part.
Right. It's the art style looks pretty cool.
The art is nice, yeah.
Like, somewhere between, you know, it's a little more on the realistic side than cartoony. The Joker's creepy looking. He's got the kind of, like, it looks like cuts on either side of the mouth,
right.
Sort of thing.
But he also is driving a piano car. Who
doesn't want to drive a piano car?
And then very brief glimpses of, like, I think I saw, like, well, there was a dragon. There was somewhere, like, looked like a Chinese dragon. No, it was even weirder than that. It was,
it looked like a worm, honestly.
But it had, like, it feathers.
It didn't have any feetsies.
But, you know, but it did look kind of like, you know, those Chinese, you know what I'm talking about, the Chinese dragons and stuff. And yet, I believe this is Japanese, not Chinese, so right. I don't know what the connection is. It may just be crazy fantasy dragon. Maybe it's even a dream sequence. I don't know. Maybe it's a flashback.
What does isekai mean?
I don't know. Somebody look it up. But apparently the Suicide Squad may show in it at some point because Amanda Waller is briefly glimpsed. Maybe Killer Croc, I thought, was briefly glimpsed.
Okay. So isekai is a subgenre of fantasy in which a character is suddenly transported from their world into a new or unfamiliar one.
Is the Suicide Squad going to go into the past, like some fantasy past of Japan, and have to pull a heist in samurai times or something?
Or it's going to be Spirited Away, kind of in a weird,
The point is, we don't know anything.
No, we don't know.
So brief, I didn't even, like, really feel good about it. It's okay.
Yeah.
It looked kind of neat, but there was really nothing to kind of sink your teeth into.
I don't believe anyone in this room is the audience for this movie.
Probably not.
I don't even remember the last time I watched a DC animation.
If you like anime and Joker and Harley Quinn, you might like this.
You might like it. I'm sure we'll watch whatever the next trailer is when you actually see a little bit of the actual movie.
Maybe. we also saw the new trailer for Dune Part 2, which definitely has a lot more to it than the previous one.
Yep.
It's a really good trailer. I am very, despite the fact that I have never read Dune, I am very excited to see part two of the movies. I actually really like the first one quite a bit. And I hear he is making noises about doing Dune Messiah as like a third part of the trilogy.
Does make sense? Seems like in some ways he's, I can even see stuff in this that's setting up elements of that. And I had already heard that some element of Dune Messiah might be like pulled into this.
Yeah.
Like, in the latter half, it may just fold in some of the incidents and stuff from that as part of the storyline. Maybe some of it can stand on its own. Maybe it'll, you know, but based on the success of the previous Dune movie, I'm going to guess that if he wants to make Dune Messiah, he's going to get to make Dune Messiah.
I was thinking the same.
Nick, thoughts on it?
I think it looks good. I'm excited to see it. I don't know if I'll see it in theaters.
Did you see the first one in theaters?
Mm-mm.
Oh man, it's worth seeing in theaters. I saw it twice in theaters.
Yeah,
you know, I have a sort of a slight love hate with the book, and I suppose I have a slight love hate with all film versions of it, including this one. I find his color palette boring, and
I get that.
Color palette. He does. He uses it in every single one of his movies.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, it turns out I find all his movies boring.
I go back and forth. There are movies of his that I really enjoy and movies of his I don't care for at all.
Did he make Sicario?
He did.
I saw that recently, and that was on the higher end of what I like about him. You know, obviously more grounded than his sci-fi stuff like Blade Runner, or did he do Annihilation?
No.
Arrival.
Yeah, he did Arrival. So what I've discovered with Villeneuve is that everything I see, I like, and then I forget everything about it.
Right.
And that is the case. I really enjoyed Blade Runner 2049 in the theater. Could not tell you what happens in that movie. Really enjoyed Arrival. Could not tell you what the story is. Did not love Sicario, but also couldn't tell you what happened in it.
Yeah. Sicario is a pretty straightforward one. Yeah. A woman gets recruited from, like, some kind of DEA thing to do, like, black ops.
But then it turns into a weird, like, this guy's a badass at the end, which I didn't like.
You're talking about, what's his name's character?
Benicio del Toro?
Yeah.
He's the Sicario.
But it's a weird...
like, you're like, okay, this looks like it's being extremely critical of American black ops. Yeah. But then they kind of made him out to be kind of a badass in a way that I was like, I don't know if this is meant... I'm sure it's probably meant to in some way challenge us and be like... The same way Rorschach is, right?
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, Rorschach's a badass. Oh, Rorschach's a freak.
But Emily Blunt was like the viewpoint character in
right.
that.
And she has to make this sort of decision if does she want this life or not. Anyway, I had mixed feelings about it, but I did find it more watchable, and I think that the sequence at the border checkpoint is one of, like, the most suspenseful sequences I've seen in a movie.
Also, the opening is really, really hardcore, where they find all the bodies in the walls of the house.
Of his movies, Doom was my favorite that he's done.
Nick, your favorite that he's done?
2049.
2049, and I'm going to go with Sicario, so we have a three-way split decision.
Yep.
I think Arrival I need to watch again. I saw that movie in theaters, but an hour prior to it, my father-in-law told me the twist, and I was like, ruined the entire movie for me. Thank you very much.
That sucks.
So I knew the twist.
That's ridiculous. That's no good.
I've seen the movie. I don't remember the twist. I don't remember any of it. I remember the trailers.
I think Arrival has a very unique look at how to, like, interact with aliens and sort of the
like,
language.
What if the magic of discovering aliens for the first time was dismal and boring?
That is kind of his vibe.
Well, military controlled, and that's what it becomes.
Yeah.
I guess you would think that aren't they brought in as, like, scientists, though,
linguists.
Linguists to work under a military thing? But you'd think it'd be, like, this really, like, amazing, still, you know, a little bit of the energy of Contact.
There were a couple of scenes where they're by themselves.
Yeah, what if interacting? What if Close Encounters was sad?
Yes, it's all very sad.
But I also like Jeremy Renner and Amy Adams. So, I mean...
Yeah, sure. Good people can be in bad movies.
Yeah.
That's very true.
No, anyway, I've liked all the stuff I've seen from even Sicario. I didn't like the ending, but I like bits and pieces of it.
Yep.
But it never makes an impression. Dune made enough of an impression where I'm like, I remember what happens in Dune.
There are two parts of this trailer that make me want to go see it. And it's Zendaya's larger role. Because in the first one, she barely gets, like, 10
seconds. She showed up, gave him a moist high five, and on with the show.
And weirdly, I'm glad that they didn't kill off Josh Brolin. And he comes back as...
Gurney Halleck?
Yes.
Yeah.
And he looks like he is going to have a problem with... Drax, essentially.
Yeah,
the reverse,
reverse
Thanos Drax.
I think they're not friends.
Yeah.
I forget exactly what the backstory is, but I know that,
I think,
like,
he killed his family, right?
Yeah, he has old bad blood with him. I'd be curious how that plays out in the movie, because I remember how it plays out in the book, at least. And I think they may have maneuvered a few plot lines around slightly. I'll tell you about it after the movie.
And we'll see how Christopher Walken does as the Emperor.
Right. So this is the first time we've seen the guy who's the Emperor of the known galaxy. And it is, like, Christopher Walken is going to be good.
He's a very good actor.
Sure, he's going to be good. But I can't, there's a certain, like, when you just see his face, no context, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Well, because he's become like
you
a
look like
caricature.
You expect Christopher Walken.
And but then you forget he can be creepy, like in The Dead Zone.
Sure.
Yeah.
The Dead Zone, though, he was supposed to be just a normal school teacher.
I was mixing up The Dead Zone with this, where he plays the evil fallen angel.
Right.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I can't remember the title
what you're
of
talking
that
about.
One.
Prophecy.
That one. But.
Yeah. Little man. That's all how. Right. If he doesn't address Paul as little man, then I don't know what I'm even there
so
for.
So we've got one bit of normal news and then a bunch of insane news.
Yes. So what's the one bit?
I'm gonna start with a bit of normal. There's a movie. There's a show coming to Prime called The Bondsman.
Oh, right.
Which is Kevin Bacon's going to star in it. It is a horror action series. It's from the guy who did a short film called The Chair that was in competition for the Palme d'Or.
Yeah, it sounded weirdly kind of like a Vampire Hunter D.
Oof. It's the showrunner for Carnival Row, which was not a great show.
I don't remember.
Is that
so,
the...
It was the fairies and warfare
with
show.
Orlando Bloom?
Oh, yeah.
He ran the second season, which I didn't see, because the first season was so terrible.
Yeah, it was not good.
But this is Blumhouse. It is centered on Hub Halloran, a backwoods bounty hunter who comes back from the dead with an unexpected second chance at life and love and a nearly forgotten musical career, only to find his whole job now is a demonic new twist. You know what? I lied. They're all weird stories.
Well, no, that's not weird. Kevin Bacon will inject his music career into any role he gets.
Fair. That's true. Listen, does anybody here dislike Kevin Bacon? Because I
no,
like Kevin Bacon.
No, everybody likes Kevin Bacon.
Right.
His last movie was abysmal, though, I will say
what
that.
What was it?
It was They, Them, that...
I heard rough stuff about
that. Yeah, that was really, really bad.
What could have been a horror movie that had the opportunity to be kind of forward-thinking and
was
insightful.
Regressive.
And was regressive, apparently. But he also recently did Guardians Holiday Special,
yep.
Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday
which
Special.
Was amazing.
Which was amazing.
Yep.
Of course, playing... Himself.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I love Kevin Bacon. He every role he's been in has something.
And he has
going
had he has horror roots.
He does.
He has to his name Tremors. I believe he was in the original Friday the 13th. Was he in one of those?
Nah, he might have been.
I think he was one of the dudes who got killed. Just rando dude.
Stir of Echoes,
and that's a good horror movie.
Unsung. One.
People should watch it. It's a good ghost story.
Yep.
If you like that kind of thing. So he's got that in his blood. I don't know that I particularly want to see like a modern day horror Witcher kind of thing, but it's and I'm a little worried about the trying to do action horror sometimes.
Yeah.
But I'm at least open to the idea, and you know Kevin Bacon's cool, so good luck.
Yeah. Okay, first crazy one.
Okay, so y'all know that Mattel is making the Barbie movie.
Yeah, right. It looks great,
and
good.
Everybody agrees Barbie looks kind of like inspired and weird and cool.
So they're going to do a bunch more. And among those...
Not a bunch more Barbie movies, although maybe, but
yes.
A bunch more Mattel movies.
Yep. So among those, soon to come, is Hot Wheels by J.J. Abrams.
Yep. Let's just go through the list real quick.
No, we have to go. He describes this as grounded... For a long time, we were talking to Mattel about Hot Wheels, but we couldn't quite find the thing that clicked that made it worthy of what Hot Wheels, that title, deserved. Then we came up with something, emotional and grounded and gritty. What...
Right, you would have thought that it would have been like Speed Racer or something.
Yeah,
but no. You know how they have those like flip through the air tracks.
Yeah.
You know, like where the cars spin around and land on the other side of the track or something as a kid.
Or did the,
but like,
the,
what if the, what if one of those cars crashed and the guy had like his arm severed in the crash? I hope it's going to be what was the Tarantino movie?
Oh yeah, Death Proof.
Death Proof. I hope it's going to basically be like Death Proof's violence in a Hot Wheels movie.
Sure.
Yeah. Is there any chance that Abrams was saying that with tongue-in-cheek? The gritty Hot Wheels movie?
It's a possibility, but I don't know.
I didn't know like Hot Wheels had a backstory. I thought they were just collectible
just
cars.
You know what? There was... I feel like there was like a... I might be blurring properties, but I feel like
you're
there was like...
Wait a minute.
I'm thinking of Pole Position.
No.
No, my brain
No, there was
like
a Hot Wheels comic from DC or something in the 70s.
There was a cartoon
and like
as well.
Alex and Alex Toth did some art for it, I think.
Okay.
Now...
So I have to look, because
I don't know that
a...
they would... But there's not like any real serious backstory. I think that was just a short-lived thing. Will there be a man named Hot Wheel? That's what I want to know.
I hope so.
Will his car be the Hot Wheels?
Yes.
Will he... is it the Cool Rider from Grease 2? All right, what
so
are
it ran from 1969 to 1971. It was
okay,
a 30-minute Saturday morning cartoon.
Sure.
Okay. Alex Toth did work on cartoons. I bet he did some of the designs
probably.
Or something for it. Nick, would you type in Hot Wheels and Alex Toth?
Sure.
Just tell me if you get anything.
All right. So this is an article from MovieWeb. I just want to point out, as always, most of these movie sites write terrible articles.
Sure.
I'm just going to list off the articles, see if you catch what I caught. Other Mattel brands soon to get the big screen treatment include Barney, Rock'em Sock'em Robots, Magic 8-Ball, Barney, Uno, Viewmaster, Polly Pocket, Matchbox, American Girl, Major Matt Mason, and more. Why is Barney in there twice?
Isn't that important? I mean, Barney had
this... I thought you stumbled somehow.
Nope. That's in the article.
Barney twice.
Yep. Well, they're, I mean...
All right, we know a few things about a few of these things.
So we're going to talk about Barney a second. But Rock'em Sock'em Robots...
Already done, by the way.
This, by the way, does say some of these imagined as more mature films, but not all of them will be. Mattel Films' Kevin McKeon has stressed that what's most important is just to make a good movie, and will sometimes result in a film good more for adult audiences.
Well, apparently,
I don't believe Mattel's goal here is to make a good movie.
Well, apparently the Magic 8-Ball movie is written by the same guy who did Cocaine Bear.
Oh my god.
So, you know, I will point out real quick, just as one or two counterpoints, at least opening up the possibilities.
Yes, yeah.
Clue is a famously good movie.
It is true.
The Ouija, second part Ouija movie by Mike Flanagan, also a good movie.
Yep.
That's based on a dumb game to contact spirits with.
Sure.
Yes.
Look, hey, there. If you're doing a horror movie based on Magic 8 Ball, I can see that.
Nick and I talked about this off mic, and we decided that Magic 8 Ball has a potential as a horror movie, and also I believe the Viewmaster one. Because I think what happens is you have a kid who's got, like, a Viewmaster, like, when they first came out in the 60s or whenever it was. Yep. And he's, you know, just looking at Spider-Man ones and other ones like that. But then he finds one that's, like, shows, like, this strange ghost story of the house he's in. And that later on he can find other reels that, oh, the things he thought he saw, that there's another reel in between of them. Do people even, by the way, know what Viewmaster is? Probably a lot of people listening to this.
It's still around, right?
Yeah. I think it is. But they were like little, they were sort of like little camera-esque things that a kid could look at that had reels that you put into them that just kind of like went through still frames, often from TV shows or animation. But it was like you were watching a little private movie. It was, you know, when kids didn't have iPads and stuff like that, it was a little thing a kid could do to feel like he had his own little movie.
Yeah.
Were they like 3D?
Nah, not really.
No, okay.
It kind of felt like it because you had this thing covering up your eyes and shrouding you in darkness. But,
so now there's a Viewmaster VR.
What?
I mean, that
Fuck
makes
that.
Sense. So, like, Polly Pocket, American Girl both make sense as sort of kids. You know, you could make a...
Sure.
Matchbox. Is Matchbox Cars?
Yeah, Matchbox is just like the shittier Hot Wheels.
Yeah, that'd be like making a GoBots movie.
You know what?
I mean, you know what the
best GoBots reference was? Was in Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special.
Yeah.
That was amazing. If anybody still hasn't seen the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special, you really owe it
to
yourself.
See it. Yep. But Uno? Uno. I don't know how you make a movie of Uno.
Here's what I suggest. Famously, that's one that like people end friendships, right?
Yeah.
Because of the way it is. I say you do it about a family that's a slightly serious but still slightly all ages friendly. A family that's having issues, and like grandma like has her traditional Uno game, and it sort of brings to light the family's already struggling moments. But in the end, they find that they can bond even in the light of adversity over it.
Yeah.
All right. No, it sounds terrible, but I'm just saying. If I needed to pitch it, I'd pitch it as
I want my killer Viewmaster movie.
I think you can have the Uno thing also have some funny stuff as people like shred, guess what, Granny, and then she gets owned. I've never played Uno. I didn't play Uno as growing up.
I mean, I played it. I haven't played it in forever, so I don't really remember.
Yeah, like I guess I've played it once or twice. Granny, Uno, did you grow up with it?
I played a bunch of Uno. Yeah.
Okay. Is it
is
good?
Is this where you're color matching or you know?
Right, and there's like some kind of wild card one, right?
Yeah. Uno's not good.
Yeah,
Uno like Monopoly is not a good game.
Do you go back to start?
It's just one of those things that that people played as a kid, and they associate everything you ever did as a kid with somehow with being good.
People come in, they're like, "We want this." Various people doing Monopoly. I'm like, "No, you don't. You don't want a Monopoly game."
There are games from your childhood that get reprinted that are worth, like the Dark Tower.
Yeah.
Or...
Yeah. You know, they need to do a Monopoly game that's like full on Wolf of Wall Street, capitalism gone amok, kind of thing. I guess arguably Wolf of Wall Street was Monopoly the game.
And then we should talk about Barney a little bit. It is led by Daniel Kaluuya.
Right. Was that the star of Get Out?
It is.
Right?
Yep.
Great actor.
Yep. It's set up at A24.
I thought it was an A24-esque.
Yeah, it's
an A24.
No, but it's an A24 style.
Okay. Right.
By the way, that might be a warning sign in and of itself. Like somebody's
studio.
Like, yeah, we're making it like the A24.
No, you're not.
Because A24 generally has the craft to bring to the table to at least attempt the stuff they're doing. It might be highfalutin, but usually they're pretty good at it.
Barney by way of Midsommar.
Maybe. So
or,
I do think here's
Hereditary.
What I think. I think that this is the Barney that's not just the I love you, you love me, just hand-holdy one. I think this Barney comes smashing through things, and he brings challenging educational stuff to people. He's busting out the critical race theory and critical thinking skills. He's showing people how, teaching kids how advertisers manipulate you and politicians manipulate you.
You don't think it's a cult where they put somebody in the Barney suit?
I mean, they can go. They can Five Nights at Freddy's it. I kill you. You stay dead.
Yeah.
It's a weird one. Can anything get made? Yes. Could anything be good? Potentially.
Yeah. Sure.
The likelihood of these movies turning out good is about the likelihood of that Battleship movie coming out good, the one that came out years ago. Nick's about to press play.
Leslie of Neeson. I've press played long ago on that one.
Yeah. Nick, what letter grade would you give it?
Oh, that's like a C.
Okay.
C plus?
No, C minus probably. It's better than the Adam Sandler Pixels movie.
Yeah, well, sure. Okay. That makes sense.
If that's the bar we're using.
I do believe it. I believe you.
All right.
No, the bar we're using always with video games is Super Mario Brothers. That's like the bottom of the barrel.
not the current one, but the previous one.
Yes, right.
Correct. I haven't seen the new one.
Dennis Hopper, John Leguizamo, Bob Hoskins. Nick, it's a good cast, though.
Bob Hoskins didn't know what he was making there. Apparently he was drunk on the set a lot.
Are you serious?
Yes. Oh, that's very serious.
That's amazing.
But it's got John Leguizamo and Dennis Hopper in it.
Yeah.
Give him some credit, Nick.
Yeah.
Dennis Hopper was in only quality things.
He's only ever been in any good movies.
Yep, I can't think of any one bad movie he's been in.
Yep. Oh, except for that one.
Except for that one. All right, let's take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some TV and stuff. Okay, so I'm going to start off by talking about a couple of games I played this weekend, because I've been playing a lot more games of late.
You're talking about board games, not video games.
Board games, what we sell.
Yeah. How about all games were video games
no,
now?
No, no.
That's what we're fighting, Randy.
So I played a game that's called Ethnos, which has actually been out of print. It's a 2017 game.
Uh-huh.
But I happen to find that that game, that designer had done what they call a... they don't call it a reskin. They have a name for it. Basically, it's a reskin game. It's they take the game, they change the trappings of it, and did some slight tweaks.
Small World, which we talked about just earlier, is a reskin of an older game.
Yeah. So this game is called Archaeos Society.
Okay.
And it is a... it's basically you are archaeologists of different stripes.
Yep.
And you are trying to discover these lost artifacts and things.
Yeah. I remember us talking about this when it came back in a few weeks
ago. And the basics of Ethnos, which is the same kind of thing, is basically you are on your turn, you either draw a card or play an army. It's an army in Ethnos, and this it's a team.
Uh-huh.
And there are, I think, a dozen different archaeologists, each have different powers, and whichever is your leader, you use their power.
Okay.
And so you're playing a group of 1 to 6 cards, and then you get a power based on who's the leader, and then you get a space on the board that just keeps going up in points.
Okay.
So it's an area control mixed with sort of some set collection, and then the size of your team also is worth points at the end of the game.
Okay.
So it's like 3 different ages of exploring and that kind of thing.
Kind of fun thematics?
Yeah. It was really fun, very quick to play, but because there's different rules for the different roles, you can definitely do some different things. I really enjoyed Ethnos, and I kind of want to play Archaeos Society now, which I know our staffer John picked up, so worth a play.
I think I got confused somewhere there. The game you played is...
The game I play is called Ethnos.
But I thought you were talking about archaeological teams.
That is Archaeos Society.
Right.
The game I played was Ethnos, which was actually about fantasy races.
Okay, but use the same vibe of
I'm
it.
It's the same
it's
exact
the same
rules.
Game.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about Archaeos Society, but I haven't actually played Archaeos Society.
I see.
I played Ethnos, and I'm talking about what I played, but Archaeos Society should work exactly the same way, and I thought it worked really well.
Right on.
Yeah. It was fun. The other game I played, which we have a copy of, is called Dog Park.
Yep.
It is about competitive dog walkers.
Okay.
It has a set collection mechanic where you're trying to collect different breeds of dogs, like hound dogs versus gun dogs versus... toy dogs versus whatever the different breeds are.
Sure.
You set up the points for those breeds. Whoever's the most of those breeds gets a point value at the end of the game. And then you get these dogs in your kennel, and then you walk them. You can walk up to three dogs. You'll have eight dogs in your kennel at the end of the game. And when you walk them, you get points for that as well. And if you have dogs that have not been walked, you lose points because you want to walk all your dogs.
Yeah.
And so basically, you're sort of bidding on being the first to get these dogs out of your kennel by bidding your victory points. So you have to balance whether, well, I want to keep these points, or I'll give a few points to get first shot at the best dogs.
Okay.
And then you're collecting sets. You get two dogs per turn, at most. And then you basically walk three dogs each turn. And as you go on the walks, you pick up resources, which let you walk other dogs. The resources are balls, sticks, toys, and something else, little rubber little things. So you get these resources, and you use those to put the dogs on your lead and walk them.
Okay.
So there's some the walking mechanic reminds you of like Takedo or Parks.
Yep.
And the set collection is sort of a separate thing. So there's like three or four different things going on in the game. It was really fun. It's got a fun mechanic.
Like Dog Park as a concept sounds like a very light, super all ages game. This sounds a little bit more in depth.
Yeah, this is definitely not an all ages game. This is a little more in depth, but it's not like crazy like Agricola,
like Parks or something like that.
Yeah, it's more like Parks or something like that.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it. I thought the various things you can do, and the fact that score stuff changes, like which breed is worth which point, changes every time. There's a card you flip that shows where extra resources go on the walking route. So various things change every game. So there's a lot of changing gameplay. But I really thought it was a lot of fun. Nick, you and I were we started with a couple of new Apple shows, I watched two of them. You watched one of them.
Yes.
There's a new show called Hijack.
Yes, this one has Idris Elba.
It has Idris Elba. It is a real-time show. It takes place over 7 hours of a flight from Dubai to London.
Yep.
And the plane, as you might guess from the title, gets hijacked.
But it does not conform to sort of normal action-adventure tropes.
I think you and I both thought Idris Elba was going to be like this badass Sky Marshal. It was going to be very 24-esque or something.
Or like the Liam Neeson...
Passenger whatever.
Whatever. Or Passenger 57 with Wesley Snipes.
Yeah.
Whatever. I thought it was going to be in those things. It wildly goes in different directions that I'm not expecting.
It's a much more tense thing about basically these hijackers are threatening to kill people. Nobody knows what they're up to. It's a post 9/11 world, so several of the passengers, there's a lot of British passengers on here because it's flying from Dubai up to England.
When you say post 9/11, you mean it's set in the immediate years after it?
No, I mean it's set in modern day.
Oh, modern day. Gotcha.
But it's a post 9/11 in that it is a, we all know if someone hijacks your plane, they might be planning to crash into something. Right. Used to be that hijackers could count on people just like sitting still.
Land hostage situation.
Yeah.
Get some demands.
But now there's people who are like, we know what could happen. We've got to take them. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I thought that kind of stuff was interesting. And even like the people who are hijacking, they're getting thrown off their game because things are not going the way they expected.
Idris Elba, in addition to having a marriage that is not great.
His wife completely collapsed.
He basically still wants to be married. He's flying back to London, and his wife texted him right before, and she's like, "Don't get on that plane because they're divorced or separated for a long time. She has a new boyfriend. They have a son son with the wife, and they're there. And so there's this whole on the ground thing in London going on too, where she's like, "Why is he coming back here?
Right.
But it turns out that he's like a negotiator for these big business deals.
Yeah.
And he's going to turn those skills toward the hijackers, but not in the way you expect. He's not like a super negotiator who knows exactly how to talk to him. It's more subtle than that. It is very much a tense ride.
Yeah.
Is this a series that is completed, or y'all?
No, it's still going.
It's one episode per week.
Okay.
So the third episode just hit. I've seen it, Nick has not.
Right.
Some big stuff happens in the third episode.
I'm excited to watch it.
I did not expect much out of this, and it is super compelling.
Yeah, it sounds
pretty cool.
One of those where Apple, you know, hit strongly. It's not kind of bland or anything. It continues Apple's track record of doing pretty good stuff.
And also, like I say, it is real time, so it's like everything is like what's going on in the plane. But there's not a lot of like, there's no big sequence where someone's like, I'm gonna build a weapon and we're gonna attack these hijackers. Mostly, it is them trying to figure out how to stay alive and how to signal to the people on the ground that something's wrong.
The sequence with the captain and the co-pilot, being forced to open the door,
right. Was very tense.
Was extremely tense.
That sounds good. I like that kind of, it's something that more grounded in realism sounds interesting to me.
I keep looking for Idris Elba's beatboxing to...
He does not appear to be a DJ.
No, but his son was listening to kind of DJ music, and I half thought... I was like, I wonder if that's his music.
The other Apple Plus show I've watched, which has completed its, I think, 8-episode first season...
I really want to watch this.
I've only seen 3. I watched it based on a recommendation from a friend. It's called The Silo.
Yep.
We watched the trailer for it a little while back and talked about it.
Yeah.
The Silo is basically... There's this sort of... little YA fiction kind of society. They all live
in this... It also looks kind of like Fallout.
Yeah.
They
live
shelters.
In a silo. They're about 150 years ago, the rebels tried to open the silo up to the poisonous gases outside. The founders stopped them. But in the course of this, their history was lost. They don't know why they're in the silo. They don't know who built it. And so they're working with this sort of ancient technology and that kind of thing. But it's a society inside a silo.
Yeah.
The story starts with the sheriff, who's a character, I don't recognize the actor, and he's married to Rashida Jones, and they get approval for a 1-year period to try and have a baby, which is apparently the third time they've done it. And then she starts finding out she starts talking to some people who are conspiracy-minded, and they're like, they don't really want you to have a baby. And there's this whole thing about, and so she talks to this one woman and this other guy, and they're like, there's artifacts of the things that are not... It's illegal to have artifacts of the previous times. And there's some implications that maybe the rebels aren't the ones who destroyed the history, that maybe the people in charge did. There's these sort of shadowy figures called Judicial, which is sort of these little fascistic people who run things. But the story is about people going outside. People go outside to clean, is what they're called. They clean the windows, and then they die of poison. And we see that happen... And we're starting to wonder if the outside maybe isn't what it's supposed, what they're promising it is. So there's a question of, like, what is going on outside there? But there's also a harrowing sequence in episode 3 where they have to repair the generator that's keeping all the power going. And they only have, like, 30 minutes they can do it in because it heats up. And there's some fun, like, tension in there, but there's also a lot of good mystery stuff.
Well, that sounds up my alley. That's a Prime thing, too?
Yeah. No, it's Apple Plus. These are both Apple Plus. Okay. I was thinking that this was going to be a little kind of slow and boring sci-fi, because I've seen a fair amount of that lately. But no, it's very compelling. Great performances. Rebecca Ferguson from Mission Impossible is in this. Will Patton is a character actor you've seen a ton of stuff.
Yep.
It's a really good, it's a really interesting sci-fi thing. Nick, you said Graham Yost.
Yeah, was Graham the Yost showrunner. Show runs it.
That's he's
Justified.
Justified. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
If you haven't seen the Will Patton movie that is the best, go watch No Way Out.
But everybody has seen the Will Patton movie called Armageddon.
Yes.
Yes.
Will Patton has to be getting kind of old now.
He is. He's older in this. Yeah.
Yeah. But always a good character actor. Yep. Always brings it.
Dave, you finished up Peacemaker.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to talk about this, but then I realized I don't know that I have a ton to say that we didn't discuss before, other than I continue to enjoy the ride throughout, and I'm going to recommend it to people. Yeah, well, yes and no. I think that there's a little bit of the tropes of James Gunn that show up, which is he really likes his hero's walk, walk.
Yeah, he does.
And things do tend to kind of come down to his heroes taking out people with guns.
Yeah.
Suicide Squad, Guardians, this. And I'm like, is he like a little sort of a paramilitary nerd? And you're like, I grew up with G.I. Joe and stuff. Believe me, I like people running around with guns and stuff, shooting, blowing up stuff. But I was just like, I wonder if he maybe needs to broaden his palette so that it's not always like big showdowns with the bad guys, couple sacrifices along the way.
It's fair.
But that said, I love all the characters along the way, and there's some really great moments with, is it Adebayo? Is that her name? And Peacemaker, thinking of the thing where she has to apologize for her planting a diary in his room that's an incriminating thing in there. And Peacemaker is not really ready to let her apologize. And Vigilante joins in on making fart sounds every time she tries to apologize. let's see, there's the big showdown with his dad. A very monstrous special effect at the end. He does love his... kaiju, and also special points to the guy who plays Economos in it.
Yeah,
who gets to be the sort of the sad sack sort of throughout the whole series, but who did when he saw the big creature having, I guess, survived the Starro thing, is like, no more kaiju, no more kaiju. Let's see, they have a lot of fun stuff with the different helmets in the last one.
Yep.
And, but, you know, what he does, and I think this is a good trope of his, is, you know, when, you know, Randy, when they're planning the big attack on the bad guy's sort of base at the end,
yep.
And they're gonna, like, have, they're gonna use one of Peacemaker's special helmets, the Sonic Boom one or whatever,
yes.
And they're like, Eagly, go drop it on the barn where it can blow mm-hmm. stuff up, and he just flies off and drops it randomly somewhere uh-huh. in the woods,
yep.
And then they have to spend, like, the next 15-20 minutes of the show scouring the nearby woods of the bad guy base to try and find the helmet that Eagly dropped.
Yeah.
But what that is for him is an opportunity for these characters to all pair off and have conversations.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, for Peacemaker to have these weird visions of his dad and yep. stuff like that. So he's always essentially, I'll say this, even though he does have certain action tropes, he always mines the action tropes for character moments.
Yeah.
And so that was something I really dug. And he likes, but he gives his characters happy moments too. Mm-hmm. He gives his characters some good righteous payback sometime. I'm not 100% sure that, that Peacemaker made the right choice about the butterflies in
yeah,
the end.
Yeah.
Which I will be interested to see. Is there going to be a second season?
Yes.
Okay. I'll be interested to see where they go there with that. Trying to think of anything else major that happened, but I don't want to just outright spoil big things. People should go see it.
Yeah.
But I think the show would appeal to people who like any of the sort of edgier superhero things like Suicide Squad or The Boys. Any James Gunn project.
I really like The Boys.
Uh-huh.
This is better.
You think so? I've not seen The yeah. Boys.
The Boys is fun. This is better. Peacemaker is one of the best shows on TV. It was super funny. The action is really good. The character stuff is very heartfelt. Mm-hmm. I actually, and some of the obscure, there's a cameo at the end of this one, at the end of the final episode. A couple cameos.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That about killed me.
Yes, that was.
They did it.
Yeah, that was a crazy minute or two yep. sequence.
Yep.
I was like, what's Randy talking about? Oh, I know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. That was great.
And, and I actually think they did a good job of making John Cena really just. He elevated himself in this one. Like, I like John Cena, but I'm like, oh, I actually think you're an actor now.
Yeah. Yeah, he managed to play all the scenes, no matter how gonzo, whether it was gonzo stuff, straight-faced yep. comedy, mm-hmm. serious scenes, Peacemaker breaking down occasionally.
Yep.
He brought an A-game to all of that stuff.
And Economos, or whoever pronounced his yep. name, had some good moments in this last one, too.
He did. He got to... You know, he'd already had his big sort of hero moment with the chainsaw,
mm-hmm.
and then a sort of a super pathetic moment, like I could only say in the final episode, but that kind of gets turned around, and again, it's an opportunity for the characters to grow.
Yeah.
Super, super fun and compelling to watch. I always ended every episode and I was like, I need to see what happens next. Yep.
Also, maybe the best credits on TV.
Yeah, I mean, there's just no doubt about it. I don't know what you could say is better than that.
It's great.
Yep.
Nick, you watched a low budget sci-fi or a horror thing called Influencer?
Yeah, so this is on Shudder. It was from 2022, so last year.
Okay, all right.
Pretty simple story in the sense that a woman who's an influencer goes to Thailand, supposed to go with her boyfriend. Boyfriend drops out at the last minute. She continues on.
Mm-hmm. What kind of influencer?
She's like a social media influencer.
Okay.
Just like showing all the different locales and okay. kind of like the pretty aspects of everything. But you sort of get that and the juxtaposition of her actual life, which seems to be kind of... falling apart in a lot mm-hmm. of ways, and then she runs across another woman who's staying at the same hotel,
mm-hmm.
who they become friends.
Mm-hmm.
She starts showing her various like secret locations that she only knows of, and then she takes her to a deserted island and leaves her there.
Okay,
and then it kind of zigs and zags in ways I was not expecting. There's some Hitchcockian elements to it that I was surprised by. Basically, the woman who befriends her, her name is Cassandra Nod. I did not recognize her at all.
Hmm.
It's interesting. She actually has like a facial, like a
skin
blemish
condition or something.
No,
yeah.
No, it's just like this black blemish that's on her face. It's an actual thing that she has.
Okay,
they just incorporated it into her character. She does an amazing job as sort of this, not noir femme fatale, but kind of
right. Sure.
A little bit Black Widow-ish, but it's an interesting story that I kind of was just enthralled by as it snowballs into kind of destruction.
Interesting, okay.
But I really dug it. I didn't have any expectation whatsoever. And I thought all the acting...
It wasn't, like, produced by Blumhouse or anything like that?
I don't think so.
Did it feel like one of their sort of smaller
movies? It was
actually
produced by Shudder.
Oh, Shudder, okay.
Yeah, that's where it's on right now.
Yeah.
It's one of their Shudder exclusives.
Okay.
Yeah, like, the cast, I didn't recognize
anybody.
Did Shudder
also make that movie that was, like, the Escape Room one?
No.
Okay, I couldn't remember. What has Shudder produced that's been good? Did they do that one that was like the Zoom call thing? What was that?
Hush? No. It's not called Hush. It's,
what was that? Host.
Host, yeah. Did they do that? They had that exclusively.
Yeah.
But I just don't know if they produced it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they're, like, what's on there as opposed to
My assumption would be Shudder would make mediocre horror movies, to be honest.
I don't know if they produced, but Skinamarink, which I, you know.
That was quite the experience.
It was.
There's also a movie on there that I really want to watch that I'm kind of, like, getting the, trying to rise to the occasion to, because I've heard really, it's crazy, called Speak No Evil, about a family, like, I think they're a Swedish family, who, on a vacation, randomly meet people. And then befriend
them.
That
is horrifying.
And and then they decide to go to this person's place during the holidays. Huh? And it's like kind of meeting your vacation friends in their actual house. And there's supposed to be some wild, crazy stuff.
Huh.
I've heard it's very hard to watch. I'm going to be curious, but I will...
I'm not usually a fan of the very hard to watch horror. But every once in a while, one of them has like won me over on something.
Oh,
like I think Saw does not deserve its reputation for torture porn. I think what do you call it? Japanese movie Audition.
Oh yeah, Audition.
That is kind of a hard to watch movie at portions, but it's also I think actually has a good story. So every once in a while they can get me.
I've liked a lot of what I've watched with Shudder. I'm glad to have that service, finding some interesting things on it.
The last thing I wanted to mention is that I watched The Simpsons.
Yes. Randy, you and I were born on The Simpsons.
All 34 seasons?
I have not watched all 34 seasons. However, Dave, you and I, we both
the heyday would
the
be like, let's just broadly say 1990 to 2000.
Yeah.
Is roughly like, at its peak.
6 to 10, maybe?
Yeah. And then we both fell off of it, but you, ATX,
it's
some stuff got it back on your radar.
Yes, it has been on for like 35 years.
Is it the longest running TV show ever?
It may be. It's definitely in contention for it.
Curious.
So I saw the showrunner of Simpsons has been with it for a while now. I want to say like a decade at least. Was at ATX TV Fest, and I went to his panel, and he was talking about it. And I'm like, oh, this guy, that sounds interesting. He's like, he's talking about sort of what you could do with The Simpsons, and I was like, you know, it's interesting that the show that's been on this long, and they can do stuff. I'm not against long-running shows. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's hitting its 16th season, and it's still really funny and really good.
That means it's at the halfway point of Simpsons.
Yes. So, he recommended a particular episode, and I went and watched it. I think I mentioned a few podcasts ago that episode that I watched that was sort of a outtakes from The Simpsons, essentially. Was
right.
What it was. So, after that, I watched a couple more. It happened to be like the It parody, and their Trails of Horror, which are always kind of fun. And so I was like, oh, well, I'll watch all the season 34 until it loses me. And I wound up watching the whole season. Now, in fairness, I was watching it while I was also doing other stuff, so it wasn't like I was like fully paying attention to it.
But, how many episodes?
So
10,
there
20?
Are 22.
Dang, that's old school.
Yep. So I'm not going to run down all of it, but kind of interestingly, I guess maybe I didn't see the first two episodes of the season. I started with episode 3,
okay,
which was the one I talked about. But so the ones I watched in this one, they did an episode about Duffman.
Yep, sure. That's Duff is their beer.
Duffman is they're replacing him as mascot, and he is trying to reconcile with his estranged daughter.
Okay.
Which is very, and basically he gloms onto Homer and thinking that Homer and Lisa are like the perfect dad and daughter, which of course it's because Lisa's amazing and Homer is a big doofus. But Homer basically starts taking credit for being the best dad. So that's pretty fun. There is a bit where Grandpa Simpson is dating a new woman and he has a stepson who's like a young kid, and Homer is jealous of that. These are weird. These were both
that's not too. That's not too crazy, though.
Then they did a When Harry Met Sally, but also in the future kind of thing.
Okay.
Of Lisa and Nelson Muntz.
Nelson the bully.
And they keep meeting. You know, Nelson and Lisa have that one episode where they become like a couple.
I forgot about this or didn't see it.
Yeah, no, I don't remember it. This was during its heyday. So they reference that basically it's every 5 years they check in on them, and that's the older Lisa and Nelson.
Okay.
And it starts with her giving her valedictorian speech at college, and then keeps going forward about will they, won't they kind of thing. And it's When Harry Met Sally riff.
Yep.
And it's very fun.
Okay.
There is one where Bart discovers a glitch in an online game, and they showed some of this. It's like a Roblox type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they filmed some of this episode in Roblox animation.
Oh, wow.
And Bart and Skinner create a scam farming this game for its digital content so that Skinner can turn the elementary school into an arts magnet school so he didn't have to worry about any of the issues with running a school. And then they get into a war with another... hippie school that is also running a Roblox scam. So it's like a Goodfellas riff.
Randy, once upon a time, The Simpsons was known for its acerbic wit, but also kind of having like some heart. Do you feel like that is something I sort of felt they lost?
Yeah, no, they actually do. They actually have some heart. So one of the other ones I won is Moe recruits Nelson to become his goon for hockey.
Okay.
Because and I don't know if you know, the goon is like the guy who basically goes out and protects the strikers by beating up the other team, essentially.
Okay.
And there's this bit between Moe. Moe is like the perennial loser.
Right.
But his hockey team becomes popular. And Nelson is this bully who has a rough family relationship. Like, he has a single mom and that kind of thing. So Moe becomes sort of a standard dad for him. Yeah. And it kind of works.
Yeah.
And there's also a couple other high concept ones. There's there's an episode with Carl, the black character, who becomes smitten with a black woman, and then realizes that he is not black. He basically he's like he has no racial identity, and they explore what that means for him.
Oh, that's funny.
Which is pretty. I mean, they're going deep into the third tier characters, but it's working.
Yeah.
And then they do the occasional experimental one, like the one where Bart. There's one called Bartless that is very much a.
It's a Wonderful
Life. It's a Wonderful Life, but without Bart.
Right.
And then there's an episode called My Life is a Vlog, where the Simpsons become video bloggers, and it is a series of, like, YouTube shorts that includes, like, Professor Frink's science show and that kind of thing, which is all super fun.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that as a hook.
There's definitely some misses in there.
So weirdly, Randy, you would say that after 30-plus years or whatever, they've managed to find something worthy again.
There are 22 episodes this season. I would say there were maybe 3 or 4 that I thought were misses.
Yeah.
But every other one, I was like, this is all like a level of Simpsons. I'm like, this is pretty good. Also, just to tap it on, the final episode, Homer crashes through his car, crashes through the windshield of his car, and is in the brief between what might be life and death. He is visited by Maggie's elf, voiced by Lizzo.
Oh, wow.
Who takes him through self-improvement before he potentially dies.
That is bizarre.
It's bizarre. Well, not only that, it ends with Lizzo, animated Lizzo, playing her flute while Lisa plays her Simpson, or
her
plays
saxophone.
Her saxophone, while Bart slaps Homer repeatedly to make the beat. It's got some weirdness to it.
I mean, you know, once upon a time, Michael Jackson wrote a birthday song for Lisa to give to Bart.
Yep.
After 750 episodes, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
I'm not going to say that The Simpsons is like as good as it's ever been.
Yeah.
But I was shocked how good it was in this season. And now I'm like, oh, I might have to go back and watch a few of these again.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And that's good. I mean, it's a rarity, but you know, occasionally we'll talk about how just TV has kind of changed, or movies, and you know, like one of the things was like, oh, it used to be if you kind of screwed something up. Like, say, you did, made Ang Lee's Bad Hulk movie, and you're right. Like, well, guess that was the one shot Hulk I ever had.
Yep.
They're like, no, and then just a few years later, they made one. Even that was kind of a misfire in a lot of ways, but they still managed to they're just like, no, we're just going to have Hulk in the other movies, and it's going to be fine.
Yep.
And so, like, nowadays, I think they recognize that, like, if you kind of screw up or lose your way, it isn't necessarily the end of the world, and you just have a diminishing returns until it dies.
Well, I mean, Spider-Man No Way Out's a good example of that, too.
Like
Spider-Man No Way Out, No Way Home.
No Way Home?
That has Andrew Dabb's Spider-Man, which is, by all regards, not great Spider-Man.
Uh-huh.
But they made what worked about the character work in that movie.
Right, right. Yes, yes. He was in what was that series?
Amazing Spider-Man.
The Amazing Spider-Man, right.
Yep.
I like that as an option has opened up. Essentially, redemption and re-envisioning has kind of opened up as a possibility.
Well, I'm at best being in The Mandalorian. They go and they find the things that, but they're like, nobody deserves to be permanently crushed by just because it was a bad creative decision.
Right.
Now, if they were terrible people, that's different.
Right. But everybody knows that Ahmed Best was not a terrible person. Nope. He just got stuck playing Jar Jar, man.
Yep.
And so, yeah, they actually did right by him. And they should continue this trend, Hollywood and its and all related, and streaming and everything else. Try and find what's good and redirect.
Yeah. I was shocked how big Good Simpsons 34 was.
Right,
it's really worth watching. Like I said, I don't ever watch every episode, but if you're watching one, you're like, I'm not feeling this, skip ahead to the next one. There's some pretty good gems in there.
You would say if someone has was a Simpsons fan back in the day, that there is a possibility. There's a solid possibility to give a shot.
Yeah, I was very surprised. All right. We're gonna that'll wrap it up for us this time. We'll be back next time with more, and until that time, yo Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com, and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.